95% of Gen Z and 79% of investors overall would consider wealth management services offered by Google, Apple, or Facebook. Let that sink in for a moment. Retail investor trading activity has more than doubled in the last 2 years, and nearly a quarter of new investors are under the age of 30. Now, this growing investor class has rapidly shifted the demand for advice. Consumers now expect information at their fingertips and digital engagement and advice that is highly tailored to them. And if wealth managers can't deliver the access and personalization that investors want today, consumers will, and they are, looking elsewhere. So how does the industry answer the call to action to democratize the capital markets and get to wealth management for everyone? I'd like to welcome you all to our podcast, Wealth Management for All, hosted by Financial Planning and sponsored by Accenture. I'm Lisa Joyce, your guest host, and today I'm really excited to be speaking with Scott Riddell, who leads Accenture's wealth management business, and Matthew Blake, head of Financial and Monetary System Initiatives, member of the Executive Committee, World Economic Forum. Now, Scott brings nearly 20 years of experience partnering with financial institutions to lead their innovation and transformation agendas in wealth management. Matthew is responsible for the strategic direction, execution, and impact of World Economic Forum initiatives on the future of the global financial and monetary system. Matthew frequently speaks and writes about financial industry transformation, public-private cooperation, risk management, and tech-enabled innovation. Scott and Matthew are going to discuss some of the drivers of wealth management transformation, why democratization of wealth management is important for society, and really how financial and wealth management firms fit into new product and delivery models. Scott, Matthew, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Lisa.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Great. I thought maybe we would kick off this session with kind of a definition. And I was hoping, Matthew, that you could kind of talk to us about what do we mean when we say democratization of wealth?
Yeah, thanks again. And I think that's absolutely a prudent starting point. You know, we've had the benefit at the forum of partnering with Accenture on a future of capital markets initiative for the past several months here. BNY Mellon and about 50 other institutions, both large and small from around the world, have been engaged in this process. And we did push ourselves to define this notion of democratization. And I think we looked at it more from democratization of markets. But I think that trickles down and correlates quite well with wealth as an extension of that. And for all intents and purposes, it boils down to an increased ability for individuals across the income and wealth spectrum to access markets. And that access is obviously greatly bolstered by technological innovation, the proliferation of data and information around all of us, as well as a expanding and intricate product suite. So at its core, it's about people getting involved in markets, people having exposure to wealth management solutions in this particular case, and how to bring that to a market at scale.
Great, thank you for that. And Scott, maybe you can talk a little about, you know, some of the major shifts that we've seen recently that have enabled the democratization of wealth that Matthew described for us.
Yeah, certainly. And it's been a primary focus as we've worked with World Economic Forum and the members and unpacked the research from the study, because I think there's no doubt over the last 2 years, the democratization is happening, the realization of capital markets is happening. But how do we kind of think about, you know, the major shifts that are really driving that? And so as we've looked through this, there's three that I would point to are kind of rising to the top. First is the removal of pretty much all friction from trading itself. So in the days of paying $8 commissions in my Charles Schwab account, we now not only are able to trade for free, but retail investors have access to fractional shares and all types of products at their fingertips. And so has driven a lot of trading activity as well as a rush of first-time investors into the market. The second is just the real shift from defined benefit to defined contribution plans. I think defined contribution plans in the U.S. have grown over $4 trillion over the last decade. And so the recognition that individual investors need to be much more in control of their retirement from the start, need to be much more engaged as they're driving their future, has led to a lot of this behavior. And then lastly, just this broad topic of digital and technology. So the massive rise of innovation that's happened has really created a wide array of personalization that's available to investors. So personalization around setting up your goals and your financial plan, personalization around the type of content you want to receive or the type of products you can have access to. So investors are able to, you know, engage in new ways, really engage with a purpose and invest in a very intentional way that they're able to gain from the market.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's a really exciting time in wealth management and capital markets, and the whole idea of the personalization as well. But I was wondering, Matthew, why is it important to focus on this now rather than a year ago?
Look, it's an evolving story. Democratization didn't happen overnight per se. I think the ingredients and the elements that have been supporting this this change and this trend have been building over time. I mean, we all take for granted the power of access that we have at our fingertips through a mobile phone, you know, and the ability to leverage technology that's all around us to engage with platforms and get access to investments. If you take a step back and look at the World Economic Forum, which is a mission-based organization, and specifically the mission of the platform that focuses on financial services, we're all about looking at how to create a resilience, bolster financial stability, provide access. And so, you know, this theme very much resonates with our work. And when we think about the 250 private sector partners that engage with us from around the world, these are financial institutions primarily, they're all keenly interested to lean into. And so this point in time is fascinating. I mean, I think Scott nailed the core issues there, sort of the tailwinds pushing us in this direction. I would just throw out there a couple of other pieces that are a bit more in the mix. One component would be just the rise, prevalence, and importance of social media. You know, if you think about investors galvanizing around in a community way around a specific investment thesis, the ability to attract a number of different actors through a portal, in essence, the scale and connectivity that social media brings to that discussion, I think it's played a really important role in this environment in terms of, again, galvanizing interest in some instances, like expressing a view or a position in the market. And, you know, we've been through such a historic 24 plus months here with a global pandemic. People have been locked up at home. Certainly in the United States, but elsewhere, a huge amount of money through fiscal stimulus has made its way through to consumer balance sheets. They've never been as plush, certainly going through an economic hardship like we have over the last period of time here. You know, consumers have come through in a relatively powerful way, and they've had money to spend. And I think some of that money has made its way into markets, certainly. And maybe last, I would imagine at some point we'll talk a bit about this, but we're in a changing paradigm now. And inflation was low for so long, interest rates were negative, that's here in the US, that's around the world. And you've got a balance sheet of the Fed that went from roughly $1 trillion in 2008 to $4 trillion in 2019, 2020, and now is approaching $9 trillion. I mean, that's a bullish sentiment there. So I think it's drawn people in. So all of these factors together, I think, make it the apt moment now to really focus in on this topic.
Great. Thanks, Matthew. That really gives us a good picture of kind of what's going on. And Scott, I'm hoping that maybe you can translate that into the types of opportunities that are out there for retail investors and institutions.
Yeah, certainly. And picking up off Matthew's point around social media, just as an example, I think for retail investors, it's almost an embarrassment of riches in terms of what they can get access to. So if you think about advice, they're engaging with social media, they're using Reddit as a source, Finfluencers, and other alternative forms of content are really becoming quite prominent in how individuals are engaging and getting access around their financials. Similarly, on the product side, they're not just able to access the equity market via platforms like Robinhood, but increasingly they're able to go direct to access different types of alternatives, accessing crypto and bringing this together in different ways. There's very little shortage of what an investor can do in terms of getting access to information or product. The real challenge, and I think this is really exacerbated, you know, in the upcoming market as interest rates rise, as volatility perhaps increases, how do they make sense of it all? There's an overwhelming amount of information that they have access to, an increasingly complicated environment consumers repeatedly report, you know, the advice they're getting is not equipped. I think 80% of them reported that their advice is too generic. The data shows that they're much more willing to look outside into big tech or elsewhere to receive advice. And it's really pointing out the opportunity that institutions have. How do we better upgrade the advice we're providing to consumers? How do we make that advice really relevant to their situation? And how do we continue to help them make sense of the changing environment, given all the opportunities that they have at their fingertips?
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm wondering what this democratization means for products and services that currently exist. Matthew, perhaps you could address that.
Yeah, Scott's team, my team, we've had such a privileged perch here to talk about some of these issues because through the forum and its network, we've been able to bring together approximately 50 financial institutions from around the world. And, you know, some in the firmly in the fintech space, others more traditional actors, been around for a long, long time. And, you know, there's been a huge amount of debate. I'd say one of the most debated pieces of this discussion has been, are there adequate products available to the retail class? Some said, yeah, more than enough. Others said, you know, sort of neutral, and others feel that there's room for improvement. But I think if you were to aggregate all of those views, as it relates to products, I think the general consensus is that there's enough out there. It's really in the service category. Like, how do you bring advice? How do you bring good information, clairvoyance as opposed to noise, to investors to allow them to understand what they're investing in, certainly, and also to educate them along the way? And like, the discussions have really, I think, homed in on three core tensions, as I like to describe it. One is this tension between access and suitability. And this gets, Lisa, to your question around products. You know, not every product necessarily is suitable for every investor, right? And a big part of what a wealth manager does is try to assess that risk appetite and to align interests. And so as access has grown and the ability to put money to work in various products has also grown commensurately, I think suitability is a really interesting topic in this environment. Another tension has been certainly around this notion of education. And I think if you were to boil it down for the group, where they're spending a lot of time talking is like the role of the private sector versus the public sector versus public-private cooperation as it relates to educating investors. And so on the spectrum between information provision, educational resources, and advice, where do institutions sit on that spectrum? And finally is this piece, Lisa, that you raised and Scott raised around personalization of products and often the trade-off that comes along with high degrees of personalization, scale, and cost, and trying to balance that equation. So all of those pieces together, I think, make it really a rich moment here.
This has been a great discussion. It's such an important topic. So I'm really glad that we were able to spend some time on this. But I do have one final question, kind of where's the future? Where do you see this democratization heading? And maybe Scott, you could wrap it up for us.
Yes, Lisa. And our teams have worked with the Economic Forum members. Just the level of engagement by, you know, senior industry leaders, not just sort of participating, but really feeling ownership that this is a problem that needs to be solved by the industry. There's a lot of energy and activity around it, which I think is great. I think there's no doubt on the other side of the next decade, the world of advice is going to look quite different in terms of who consumers are receiving that from, what is the ecosystem of services and products they're engaging with, and what the technologies to access that looks like. It is going to be a complicated path forward in terms of how we get there. But I think we expect that this looks a bit like the last decade with Robo, where there's a set of innovations that will start to occur and ripple throughout the industry in terms of how advice is offering. And I think we're excited that with the World Economic Forum, there's a common set of leaders that are really galvanizing around what are the right things we can push forward for consumers and making sure the democratization is done for good.
Excellent. Great. Thank you. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have today. Scott and Matthew, really, thank you both for sharing your vision of what wealth management can become and really how the industry can make investing accessible to everyone.
Pleasure to be here, Lisa. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lisa. And Scott, good to speak with you.
And thank you all for listening in. To learn more about Accenture's wealth management practice, please visit Accenture.com/wealth. Have a great day.